Shakespeare said, "There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, can lead to victory and glory." That tide reaches Egypt tomorrow afternoon. Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, on Press TV. I'm here every week at this time, bringing you the big conversation, bringing you the great debate. But it can only be a debate if you join in. I need your telephone calls, most of all, on 44208-601-4555, or you can SMS the show on 4478-00-8066, or email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. The freedom revolution in Egypt tonight stands on the cusp. Either the revolution tomorrow will go forward to victory, or it will surely go back. Standing still is no longer an option. Let me nail a couple of home truths, which have strangely escaped the great news organizations of the BBC and Sky News. These people, firing guns, riding horses, riding camels, throwing pre-prepared half bricks, firing Molotov cocktails beside the tanks of the Egyptian armed forces, are not pro-Mubarak demonstrators. They are police thugs. They are from the Mukhabarat, the secret police of the Mubarak regime. They are in plain clothes, the Egyptian police who were withdrawn from the street last Friday. Not only do I know that because that's what is proved by the documents taken from those thugs who have been captured by the pro-democracy demonstrators, but I know it from experience. Some of you will recall the attacks, not once but twice, in Al Arish on the Viva Palestina convoys by the very same plain-clothed thugs. We were told then that they were angry civilians, but they were, in fact, policemen. And moreover, it's hard to believe that the BBC journalists don't know that. It's hard to believe that the BBC can say with a straight face that it's impossible to prove who was firing the guns. Well, it is in one way possible to prove, because the people killed by the guns were the demonstrators in Tahrir Square. So who was firing them can be inferred from whom they killed. They killed the demonstrators, and the police and the army stood by and let them. Many hundreds, maybe 500 martyrs now lie in their graves. Fighting for freedom in Egypt is not a cheap option. All sorts of talk fills the airwaves, but the brave Egyptian men and women who are placing themselves in front of the Molotovs and the guns and the sharpened stones and the camels and the horses deserve the respect of every right-thinking person in the world. Journalists in particular are being savagely assailed by these thugs. On television, Anderson Cooper, the distinguished correspondent of CNN, was beaten to a pulp, whilst his president and other great figures from the United States administration still cannot bring themselves to say the word, or two words. First of all, to tell Mubarak to go, for all the good that he may do in the name of God, go, ought to be their classical dismissal. And the second word is to the Egyptian military, whom they pay $2 billion a year, to tell them to stop this thuggery and this violence which is now enveloping Tahrir Square and everyone around about it. Tomorrow afternoon, after Jummah prayers, the Egyptian people will have to rise up in their millions, and they will have to not stand in a square statically any longer, but they will have to advance upon the organs of state power. Tomorrow has to be Mubarak's last day. These are, of course, only my own personal views. They're not the views of Press TV. They're not the views of the government of Iran. And if you have a different view, your call, I promise you, will be especially welcome. So call me, email me, text me, whatever your point of view on the events in Egypt and in Jordan and in Yemen. In Jordan, the Prime Minister has been dismissed and a new government tasked with profound reforms, if the king is to be believed. In Yemen, a day of rage drew hundreds of thousands of Yemenis of all kinds and all political persuasions onto the streets of the capital, Sana'a. Now we're showing pictures of the latest events as they unfold. This program may even go off the air because of dramatic developments in Cairo and in Alexandria and other great cities of the great Egypt. If that happens, keep calling in, because the show will be repeated and repeated more than once. And we do want to have this great debate. It may also split into a split screen, or I might be reduced to a box. Never mind. These are extraordinary times, and we want you to have your say about them. Let's go straight up to Glasgow, where I'm off to on Saturday, and talk to Jimmy. Jimmy, welcome to comment. Go ahead, sir.
George, you were dead bang on to rights last week when you said that this would happen.
Indeed.
And I think it's all down to thanks to the Tunisians, in fact, you know, that they were the first lot to stand up to these people.
Yes.
And there'll be a lot of people shaking in their boots tonight, you know, your sheikhs and your kings, and even the Israelis will be shaking, because an old saying, George, you can keep some of the people down some of the time, but you can't keep all the people down all of the time.
That's a fact, Jimmy.
Going on to this thuggery that's been happening in Israel and Egypt, it was very peaceful demonstrating for 3 or 4 days, and then the thugs appeared when he realised that they were getting closer and closer to his palace. And to see them riding their camels and their horses and the pre-packed petrol bombs and all the rest of it, you know.
They're driving up in trucks with all this material and unloading it off the back of trucks. Right next to the soldiers.
George, it was so obvious on the television. You know, I've been watching Al Jazeera, in fact, the coverage of that. Very good. Their camera lot got arrested and were held for 3 or 4 hours and had their equipment confiscated. But good luck to the people of Israel and the rest of you.
To the people of Egypt, Israel, I think you meant, Jim. But thanks very much indeed for that. The camera people and the journalists and broadcasters of these networks are taking terrifying risks to bring us these pictures. Press TV is performing exceptionally, in my view, and I'm surfing all the channels all the time. Al Jazeera, of course, especially broadcasting in Arabic, has been without peer and has played a decisive role, actually, in the awakening of this democratic spirit, this spirit of the possible, this fountain of human aspiration, which is represented in the Tahrir Square events. The other broadcasters, CNN has been particularly good, Fox News and its sister in England, Sky News, have been particularly bad, and the BBC, for which we pay, well, frankly, it's not even worth watching. Let's go to London, talk to Tony on what he thinks is an Arab revolution. Tony, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, George.
Go ahead.
Nice having you back again.
Thank you,
George?
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, George, can you hear me? Because it sounds a bit of a crackly line.
No, it's fine. We can hear you well.
You can hear me. Yeah, now, I'm going to go quickly, George, because you've got a lot of calls. Let's, the brave people of Egypt, I pull off my hat to them, and you rightly predicted last week. I admire, you know, your prediction, how accurate. And let's hope the people of Egypt get support. But let's not hope, and let's not Tahrir Square turn into Tiananmen Square, and let us hope that this is the beginning of the end, and not the end of the beginning, George, because we must give the people of Egypt all the support they rightly deserve.
Fabulous, Tony. Thanks very much indeed for that call. Keep them coming in. Here's one from Doha in Qatar, the home of the said Al Jazeera, Reem Al Khalifa. Reem, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George, very much. It's very nice to speak to you. I think it's very important to have our perspective of what's happening in Egypt. I think this is a momentous time, not only for Egypt, but for the Arab world. Finally, dictatorships and cruel regimes are coming to an end. And I think that leaders are finally waking up and listening to their people. And I really, really hope that these protests be peaceful and get Mubarak out. Mubarak had his chance, his last election, to change his policies, to push for reforms, and instead he set up a cabinet full of businessmen who benefited from him. As the rich became richer, the poor became poorer. And now, an example, I've lived in Egypt for 10 years, and an example of this in Siwa, the north of Egypt, children still live on one meal a day. You know, Egyptians are known to be proud of their history and culture, and it is the most important country in the Middle East. But under Mubarak's regime, education system was failing and the health was failing. And I think that this is the time for the opposition to take this opportunity to set up their strategies in order to be part of a successful transition in Egypt. And I really do hope that these leaders, such as Ben Ali and Mubarak and others, are brought to justice for what they have done for destroying the Middle East in the past 30 years. And thank you for this opportunity.
Well, Reem, thank you for a very emotional and powerful contribution from Doha in Qatar on the subject of Egypt. It's almost exactly 1 year ago that I was deported from Egypt and declared persona non grata. When I returned to London, a surprising number of broadcasters and journalists treated these events as if they were somehow a bad reflection on me, as if it was somehow discrediting to me to be persona non grata in a tin pot dictatorship. But I declared then, Reem, that the person who was really persona non grata, a person without status, which is what it means, was Mubarak, and that his dictatorship would fall, and fall soon. Last Thursday night, I predicted what would happen the next afternoon. I'm predicting this Thursday night that tomorrow afternoon will be decisive and will have to be decisive, because a revolution which doesn't go forward ends up going back. And in the words of Saint-Just, the great French revolutionary, a people who half make a revolution are digging their own graves. Half a revolution will lead only to disaster. A full democratic revolution must take place tomorrow afternoon. Reem, thanks for the call. We'll go from Doha to Germany to talk to Mohammed about Egypt and Tunisia. Mohammed, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Galloway.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Hello, George Galloway.
Yes, go ahead, sir. Be quickly.
I am really happy to talk to you today. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, yeah, I'm correct. I'm also from the place like the same way like this situation. We are also suffering from a dictator like this, a very small country called the Gambia. I am looking this Egypt situation.
Yes, well, Egypt is an African country, of course.
Okay, but we all believe that with faith, tomorrow, Friday, this criminal and his talks are all going to go.
Thanks very much for that, my friend. Let's go all the way to the United States and talk to James King on the very same subject. James, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, Mr. Galloway. How are you?
I'm well. Which part of the U.S. are you in?
Well, I wanted to point out actually why I think the Yemen context is different. and why it's unlikely to lead to the kind of immediate upheaval we're seeing in Egypt.
Sure. We want to hear all points of view, James. Just tell me where in the United States you are.
I'm currently in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Excellent. I was there in Detroit and Dearborn just last week.
Ah, yes, yes. Very nice.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So I think there are three key reasons why Yemen is different and the protest movement is different. And it's important for us to recognize that, because I think it means that certainly here in the United States, the Obama administration has some time to change course. Those three reasons are as follows. First, the protests in Yemen are being led by a specific political coalition. They're not spontaneous. They're not popular in some ways. It's being led by the JMP, which is the opposition coalition that actually lacks quite a bit of credibility in Yemeni society. So the question is whether or not the protests will become more popular and more representative across society. If not, I think a lot of Yemenis will simply discount them as a political tactic of the opposition. That's the first point. The second point is I'm sure your viewers know this, but in some ways Yemen is already facing three revolutions, so to speak. You have the Houthi rebellion in the north, the southern movement in the south, and of course an Al-Qaeda presence. So I think everyone in Yemen realizes that the political context is much messier. And in some ways, the government has gained credibility because they're seen as necessary to oppose these movements. And then the final reason is, and I think this is important, the relationship of President Saleh in Yemen to the Yemeni people is more ambiguous than perhaps you would see in Egypt with Hosni Mubarak. Saleh has tended to rule through patronage, through giving political favor, financial favors. So, I like to use the analogy, his iron fist, it's more like a regular human hand. Sometimes it clamps down, sometimes it opens up and gives out favors, but more often than not, it sweeps in and takes for itself. But
now,
what that
James,
means
tell
in
me,
Yemen is,
James, tell me this. What's your specialism in Yemen? Where did that come from?
Where's what?
How come you're a specialist in events in Yemen?
I lived in Yemen in 2007. I was just in Yemen in October and November, and I'm planning to be back in Yemen in April to cover the elections if they do in fact take place.
Okay, well, stay on the line because I'm going to respond to the points that you made. First of all, the so-called Al-Qaeda presence in Yemen is pretty much a fiction, a mirage. It's a tiny number of people who have been deliberately inflated by both the dictatorship of Ali Abdullah Saleh and the United States to justify, and the Saudis, by the way, to justify the continued interference in affairs in Yemen. I had a specialist from the London School of Economics on my Real Deal show on Press TV quite recently, who definitively described the pathetic nature of this so-called Al-Qaeda presence. Secondly, what you rather dismissively called the unpopular opposition in Yemen, in fact, represent a coalition which is bringing together North and South, which is bringing together Houthi and the other tendencies within Yemeni society. And as for the human hand of Ali Abdullah Saleh, actually that hand is a claw which robs and steals what limited resources the Yemen has. Yemen is not just the poorest Arab country. Yemen is one of the poorest countries in the entire world. The people in Yemen right now are finding it difficult to put food on the plates of their children on a daily basis. That's what's caused the rage, James. It's nothing to do with a sordid political maneuver on the part of Sheikh Hamid, who's a very good friend of mine, I declare that interest, or any other politician in Yemen. This is a critical mass developing against a dictator who's been the president for more than 30 years. Enough, for goodness sake. More than 30 years, even if he was a fantastic leader, even if he had Olympian skills and grace, more than 30 years would be too much. James, come back at me. James, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead. Respond.
Yes, I completely agree with you. My point here is not to defend Ali Abdullah Saleh. I'd be the last person to do this. He is a dictator. He has, if not fabricated conflicts, he's certainly exploited them. My only point is to say that in Yemen, the protest movement is very different than it is in Egypt. And what if Yemenis can continue to put pressure on President Saleh domestically, and if the U.S. and the U.K. and other countries would grow a spine and pressure him themselves, my point is that we have some time to facilitate a more peaceful transition than what we're seeing in Egypt right now. I would not discount what you're saying. I completely agree.
Okay, James, it's been great talking to you. Make sure you call me again. And get everyone in Grand Rapids, Michigan, watching Comment on Press TV. Let's go to, via webcam, Rafiq Vedair from Egyptians United, who's in London. Rafiq, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mr. Galloway.
Now, there's another demonstration at 3 o'clock Friday outside the embassy. Are you keeping up the pressure on behalf of the expat community here?
I think it's very important that the expat community in general be involved. I think what's happened in Egypt over the past 10 days or so has galvanized actually support from the Egyptians in the diaspora, if you like, because all of a sudden people feel that there is a chance that we can take our country back. And we're very proud of what people have done in terms of the demonstrations and everything that's happened over the past 10 days or so. And we would like to give them as much support as possible. And importantly, we would like to try and focus media attention on what's happening, because otherwise the government would be able to continue attacking the demonstrators who have been, up until now, peaceful in themselves and haven't initiated violence in themselves. And there have been several deaths, and we would like to focus media attention in the hope that we will be able to contribute to minimizing casualties.
And do you think that tomorrow afternoon is going to be a decisive day?
I think it's going to be a decisive day, however it plays out, really. The people demonstrating in Egypt have made it very clear that they want Mr. Mubarak to go. They made it very clear that they are going to stay on the streets and continue to demonstrate until he goes. The regime doesn't seem to have quite gotten the message, and we will be keeping a close eye on what's happening tomorrow. I hope that they will finally get the message. I hope that they won't be violent against the people who will be protesting on the streets. But whatever happens tomorrow, the Egyptians who are demonstrating and have been demonstrating over the past few days have made it very clear that they no longer fear the current authority and that they are standing up for their rights until they get the freedom that they deserve.
Now, there's a Stop the War Coalition march in solidarity with the Egyptian revolution on Saturday. Is your organization involved in that march?
We, on Saturday, will be demonstrating in front of the Egyptian embassy. We hope that the Stop the War march will join us there. We, last week, were also demonstrating in front of the Egyptian embassy and were joined by the student protests that happened in London. On Sunday, we are going to be demonstrating in front of Downing Street and presenting a petition to the government. We're trying to do as much as we can in terms of lobbying the UK government to exert some pressure on the Egyptian authorities, at least to stop them massacring demonstrators. There were very, very disturbing reports yesterday about deaths using live ammunition on unarmed demonstrators, and there were even some reports of snipers being used to pick out particular demonstrators. All of them very, very disturbing.
Well, indeed. And are you finding any pro-Mubarak sentiment amongst Egyptians in England?
I personally respect everyone's right to express their opinion. A lot of what is being labeled pro-Mubarak sentiment on different TV channels is just the regular thuggery, the hired thugs that the Egyptian government has used in the past. Anyone who has any knowledge of what goes on in Egypt understands where these people come from, understands that they have been used in the past in elections to to rig them and intimidate people. They are intimidating, beating, and stabbing peaceful demonstrators.
Indeed.
It's very unfortunate that the government has stooped to these lows to try.
Indeed. Rafiq Vader of Egyptians United. I'll be back after the news with the second half of comment. The debate is raging on Egypt. Liz in London is next. I'll be back in a few moments. You won't want to miss it, I promise. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. We are talking about a revolution in the Arab world. Principally, this weekend, all eyes will be on Egypt. And we have had a phenomenal response to this show this evening. A record number of texts and emails. My apologies, we cannot possibly get through them all during the broadcast, but I promise you all will be read and, if possible, responded. Two, thanks to all those who have congratulated me on my predictions from last week. But I've been in and around the Arab world for more than 35 years. It seems I know rather more about the Arab world and what's likely to happen there in the Arab street than the British diplomats in the Foreign Office and in our embassies across the region, not to mention the juvenile lightweights who hold the foreign policy portfolios in our country, I'm very sorry to say. Now, let's talk to Liz in London on Egypt. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello, George.
Nice to hear from you. Go ahead, please.
Well, George, you know, if it wasn't for you, I'd never know what's going on, really.
Thank
because
you.
Because I've been listening to Sky News and BBC.
Oh, terrible, really bad.
I know. They've been saying things which didn't make sense, but once I turned on to your channel today, just by chance, by the way, and I really realised what the secret police were doing. And it makes sense now that there's so much chaos, because they're causing all this chaos more than anyone else.
Indeed, indeed. No, it's a deliberate ploy. These are state employees. Their job is to create mayhem, to terrorize the population, and at least to provide a cover for a massive military crackdown, a possible military coup. Now,
okay.
This
yes.
means the client is out of control of the paymaster, because this is not the pictures, I can assure you, that President Obama wanted the world to see. But these are the pictures that the world is watching. Go ahead, Liz.
And also, you see, at the same time, although I know what the secret police are doing now, but I just want to plead with the Egyptian people that their president has served them for 30 years, and I do feel they should just treat him with some respect and dignity.
But he hasn't served them for 30 years, Liz. He's robbed them humiliated them.
But at least Egypt has had some respect and dignity for those years.
On the contrary, Egypt's dignity and respect was systematically stripped from it by the Mubarak dictatorship.
Just so that it continues to have some dignity and respect, I just plead that to the Egyptians that the president is treated with some dignity, so that he goes and Egypt is left with dignity and respect.
Well, I think that the millions marching for freedom and democracy, they are the repository of dignity and honor in the great people of Egypt. Not this thieving, scheming, intriguing, treacherous, tin pot tyranny of the Mubarak decades. Don't you think?
No, but I still feel that the dignity of the future of Egypt will depend on how they treat this president. He has been there for 30 years, but he has done something. There must be some good he's done.
Well, tell me, why don't you give me, Liz, why don't you give me an example
of
any good, any good that he has done?
I'm not Egyptian, so I have no examples. But I do know, as a citizen of the world, that he should just have some respect and dignity before he goes.
Well, I think he'll be very lucky, Liz.
Sorry?
I think he'll be very lucky to be allowed to leave the country with his life.
Oh.
I'm sure that members of his family have already left Egypt with the billions that they have been stealing over the last 30 years. But if the people of Egypt can get their hands on the tyrant, I assure you, and I'm someone who doesn't believe in capital punishment, he will face the end that Mussolini did, hanging upside down from a lamp standard.
This is what I dread to see. But anyway, well, it's up to the Egyptians. But
I'll tell you what, Liz. The best thing he could do, Liz,
yes?
is get into a helicopter now and fly to safety in Israel, because okay. Israel is the only country that will be able to afford to receive him. Liz, thanks for your call. A pleasure disagreeing with you. Let's stay in London. Talk to John on the same subject. John, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Yes, go ahead.
You are a man of my heart. I do admire you and your show.
Thank you, sir.
Now, I have a few points to make, very short, because I know there's a lot of callers out there. Now, I would like to know of these Middle East government. These rulers take the countries and make it a family business.
Yes.
Family business.
Yes.
They rule, and after so many years, they want to put their children to rule.
Yes.
This is disgusting.
Well, this was Mubarak's plan. It was Ali Abdullah Saleh's plan in Yemen.
Yeah, Muammar Gaddafi.
It's not enough that you spend, or Gaddafi, yes?
Yeah.
And it's not enough that you spend 30 years looting a country. You want to give your son 30 years to loot it as well?
Saudi Arabian family too.
Yes, of course.
No.
Of course.
I would like to send a message to the Egyptian people. Now, they need a change of government, and they should not allow this bunch of old men who are between 70 and 90 years to continue taking them for a ride.
You've got it. Absolutely right, John. Let's go to Guildford, just outside London, talk to Maher on Egypt. Maher, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi. First things first, you have a brilliant show.
Thank you.
Second thing, I was just listening to the caller earlier, Liz, who said, you know, Mubarak must have done something good. I completely disagree, and I hope that he rots in hell. And I hope and pray that the protesters and the Egyptian people come out the winner.
He's killed and tortured a lot of people. That's the point, isn't it? I don't see how you can forgive such a thing. He's a mass murderer and a torturer.
Definitely.
And a traitor.
You're very right that the only place he can go to is Israel, because they are the only people he supports, and they are the only people who support him. And I also want to point out that US and the Britain and all the other powers who secretly support Mubarak need to at least stop their hypocrisy and say that he needs to step down. Until this day, it's been the 10th day of protests. They haven't said that he needs to step down. They keep going around the bush and saying,
keep coming out with these weasel words, don't they? Transition must start now. What does that mean?
Yes, so they need to come out and at least be true and say that he needs to step down, instead of saying that they need the transition of power. What sort of a statement is that? If they're not supporting him, then they need to say it.
Absolutely. I mean, they must think the rest of us are fools, that we can't see that they're dancing around on the end of a needle, trying to avoid saying what needs to be said. Maher, thanks for the call. Great to talk to you. Let's go back to Doha in Qatar and talk to Courtney Irwin on Egypt. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Yes,
hello.
Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome. What would you like to say?
I would just like to say that I think that this is an incredibly decisive moment in terms of not only just for Egypt and the region, but also in terms of the reorientation of U.S. foreign policy that we've been seeing in real time over the past 10 days, going from supporting Mubarak to now saying that there needs to be a transition now, and the calculus that's gone into why that change in U.S. foreign policy has occurred, which is, again, now, rather than having a double standard in terms of supporting authoritarian regimes that actually inhibit and crush democracy, the United States is, for the first time in this region, preferencing democracy.
Well, is it really, Courtney, or is it playing for time to manage an outcome less inimical to U.S. policy interests than might otherwise be the case? Is that not really what's happening here?
You're absolutely right. I mean, they're trying to manage a situation. They're trying to manage, I mean, and trying to basically kind of play what you know, what's actually truly more unstable. Is it going to be staying, you know, continuing to support Mubarak even 6 months from now, which you would then have 20, you know, 80 million Egyptians at your throat, basically, or are they going to actually say, listen, we're going to be open to the risks of the unknown, and the unknown is democracy, and that might mean not quote unquote non secular Islamist groups that would be involved, and
yeah, only if the people voted for them.
If they voted for him, yeah, exactly. Democracy is messy, and you have to accept it. I mean, the issue here is that the United States is going to have to face the fact that it can no longer, its foreign policy cannot only and exclusively be dictated by its pro-Israel stance.
No, you're absolutely right. And what they should do, Courtney, is take a look at Ankara, where you have a Muslim country with an Islamic government, which is modern in outlook, which is dignified and honorable, and follows a foreign policy which is in the interests of its own people and the people of the broader region. I think that that's a model worth pursuing, and that's what the outcome would be of a free and fair election in Egypt, in my opinion. Ayman Issa is an activist. We've got him on the screen via the internet. Ayman, welcome to the show, my friend. Where are you?
I'm in Sheffield now, George.
Tell us, what would you like to say?
I'm very proud. I have a lot of mixed feeling about what's happening. Cheers, hopefulness, at the same time, fears. The job is not done yet. People need to carry on the pressure. Never trust the regime. Never trust Mubarak. He will do everything he can to defuse the situation. We need the people in the West to put pressure on their governments to do what they say is to support the freedom, democracy, freedom of speech, have a clean elections. That's all what we need, the people to put pressure on the government in the West to help the people of Egypt, because this is a critical moment. This moment will not come again in 100 years. We need to get the best out of it. There's a lot of people in the street now. They are suffering. They are in a lot of pain. There's a lot of death. They are tortured. They are under huge threat. The threat is not over, regardless of the promises of the regime, Mubarak, and all his gang who are ruling the country.
Well, that's the point, isn't it, Ayman, that it's not just Mubarak. There's no point in Mubarak getting on the plane. It's his regime that has to go.
Absolutely.
It's his political system that has to go.
Absolutely. We need to clean the whole thing. We wipe the whole system, including Mubarak, his family, the regime, all the military dictatorship. We need a civilized civilian government that rules, chosen by the government and ruled by the government law, not martial law, not military law, not special security law, but the people's law.
Ayman, thank you very much indeed. Ayman Issa, an activist, talking to us via the internet. And of course, with about two exceptions, one or two exceptions, two I'll say, two exceptions, three if you now include what might be the new Tunisia, all the Arab governments from the Atlantic Ocean to the Persian Gulf are one form or another of pro-imperialist stooge dictatorships. And a victory for the Egyptian revolution will send them all scattering. Think of a 10-pin bowling alley. Think of that wonderful ball hurtling down the middle of the aisle and smacking the biggest and frontmost pin and sending the others scattering after it. That's what we need in the Arab world. Let's go to Arthur in Sussex on Egypt and Palestine. Arthur, welcome to the show. Hello, Arthur.
Hello.
Yes,
hello,
go ahead. You're on the air.
Speak up, George. It's a bit difficult to hear you.
You're on the air. We can hear you very well. Go on.
George, let's take regime change as read in Egypt.
Okay.
Will it, hopefully, lead to a new set of politics for the Mideast? And how can this lead to How can this lead to adequate pressure on Israel to treat the negotiations with the Palestinians seriously, as opposed to the obvious contempt that they now indulge in?
Brilliant, Arthur. That's a brilliant question. And here's the answer. The siege on Gaza of 1.6 million people for more than 4 years, which has starved and atrophied that section of the Palestinian people, will end when freedom rings in Egypt. There is no conceivable Egyptian government which could emerge in a free country which would continue to lock up its brethren, 1.6 million of them, on the other side of the gate in Rafah. So the gates will fall. The siege will be over. Secondly, the Egyptian government, instead of being used to divide the Palestinian national movement and the Palestinian people between Gaza and the West Bank, between Islamist and nationalist, will in fact use its great diplomatic power, and Egypt is still the repository of highly skilled diplomats, to bring the Palestinian national movement back together. Thirdly, in any conceivable negotiation, the balance of power will decisively shift towards the Palestinian people by virtue of the fact that Egypt is a patriotic Arab nationalist country again. That can only change the paradigm. And if it leads, as I predict, to a series of revolutions throughout the Arab world, apart from those odd exceptions, which are all puppet presidents or corrupt kings, then it will change the balance still more. Nothing in my lifetime has been as important for the Palestinian cause as what's happening in Egypt. Now, as no one else is phoning in to give Israel's point of view, I'll have to do it myself. Israel is very worried that the Muslim Brotherhood will come to power in Egypt and will ally themselves with the Hamas Islamist movement in Palestine, and that some kind of resupply, restocking of military capability in Gaza will be the result. That's their fear. That's why they are anxious about what's happening in the great Arab Republic of Egypt. Let's go all the way to Toronto in Canada. Talk to Hashem on Egypt. Hashem, welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is. I would like to salute the Egyptian people for their clever move. They have been very patient, and they have their peaceful demonstration has proved that they are not violent people, and they are not against any kind of democracy, so-called democracy, what we can say. I don't know which other words we can use for democracy. And they are not against any kind of enmity or hatredness with the neighboring countries, including Israel.
Thanks, Hashem, out there in Canada. A big up to all my friends in Toronto and indeed throughout Canada. I'll be with you again soon, God willing. I'll be in Calgary quite soon, I think in March. Let's talk to William. I'm not sure where he is. He's in London. William in London, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello, George.
Hi, go ahead.
I do admire the people of Egypt.
Oh, great people, the greatest of all the Arab countries.
We are really in their debt to the fact that they've decided to take a stand. And I think we admire the people who held that square last night. There were relatively few, probably about 2,000, coming up against an attack from paramilitary forces of the regime, of the Mubarak regime, in a way which replicates what happened in Zimbabwe, unfortunately, after the election, which Mugabe lost. He sends his thugs into the townships to beat everyone up. And this group of people who have attacked the protesters seem to be in the same ilk, paid by Mubarak's party and paid in order to disrupt this peaceful protest and the joyful protest that was going on. And these people have stood their ground, and it's about time that President Obama actually stopped praying and remembered what the gospel says, or the epistle of James says, faith without works is dead. In other words, Obama needs to say now, President Obama needs to say now that Mubarak should leave immediately, if indeed, as you say, he's allowed to leave. In fact, I said today to a friend of mine, I said exactly what you've just said about Mussolini. I can already see that terrible scene repeated.
William, an absolutely wonderful call. And that epistle that you quoted, you'll be hearing it again from me, again and again. Because that's what President Obama needs to know. He keeps saying that we're praying for a certain outcome. But the outcome can be affected by the simple act of him demanding the immediate resignation of Mubarak and telling the army that the $2 billion a year will end immediately unless they take this dictator under arrest. It's easily done. Faith without acts is dead. What a brilliant quotation. Let's talk to Hak Ghani in Glasgow, who is the father of our very, very dear colleague, Hassan Ghani, who's so bravely reporting for us from Tahrir Square. Hello, Mr. Ghani. Welcome to the show.
Hello, George. Thank you very much for that.
You should be very proud of your son. I'm very proud of him.
I'm extremely proud, and I am glad that he is where he is at this time, and I'm sure there is not a better place for him to be, or a more important place, or a place where he could do anything more useful.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I was with him, as you know, on convoys. He has braved the Egyptian mobs before in Al Arish, never putting down his camera, never putting down his microphone, as the water cannon and rubber bullets and tear gas and sharpened stones flew all around him. He really is one of the bravest young men I have ever had the honor to know.
Yes, I'm sure he's at home there. And remember, he said to me that I wouldn't like to be in any other place just now. George, would you mind? I would like to announce a demonstration we are holding this Sunday. We have formed a group called Scotland for Egypt. And what we're hoping to do this Sunday at 2 o'clock is to have a demonstration in the center of the city at George Square, and you know it well.
I'll be there. So, I'll be speaking if you'll give me the microphone.
If you can come, you're more
welcome. I'm there. I'm going to Glasgow Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Sunday, 2 p.m., George.
I'll be there, George. Sunday, 2 p.m. in George Square. I mustn't advertise events, Mr. Hak Ghani, because it's not allowed. Let's quickly squeeze in Reza and Guildford. Reza, quickly, go ahead.
Oh, hello, good afternoon, George.
Yes, go on.
I was just going to say, I think Mr. Obama and the American administration should take what's happening in Egypt as a warning call, maybe, because as these two being close allies, the American nation might have an uprising against the American administration.
Well, I don't think so, Reza, because people have the vote, and they have rights in America. They have rights in Britain. They have no rights in Egypt or virtually anywhere in the Arab world. That's why this Arab revolution is rolling out and rolling forward. That's why it's up to every right-thinking man and woman in the Arab world, in the whole world, to stand up for freedom and liberty in Egypt. God willing, tomorrow is the end.
Hello, just comment the name of the phone number and just make sure the phone is 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0